This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Town in Texas still grieving after a horrific attack at an elementary school last week. Broken hearts abound, not just there, but in the United States and across the world. Lots of questions about the police and how quickly they got into the school. We'll talk about that. But hey, everybody, Kate Delaney, thanks so much for joining us on a holiday weekend. A couple of things about Memorial Day here right at the top, and then in our next segment, we'll talk more about Uvalde and what is going on happening there. But Memorial Day is a time, I think, so often we forget the real reason for Memorial Day. And maybe I shouldn't say we forget. I know my neighbors put out flags. I know that I've talked to some wonderful people just in and around my neighborhood about people they knew or people they lost or stories they heard who fought so bravely in various wars. But Memorial Day is something we observe annually. And, you know, you trace this all the way back to the Civil War, the very end of the Civil War, our worst, really. Half a million people died. And what happened then was Southern women scattered spring flowers on graves of both the Union and Confederate soldiers. There are lots of tales, specific tales, of women doing that. A lot of places, as I was reading today, have claimed that they held the original Memorial Day. This was it. This is where it started, in wonderful Savannah, Georgia, Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and we know how significant Gettysburg was to the Civil War, Waterloo, New York, another place, Warrenton, Virginia. But Charleston, South Carolina was another one of those spots where they say, we really started Memorial Day in remembering, and the reason is because there was a mass grave that was uncovered of 257 Union soldiers. They had died apparently in a prison camp. And in 1865, there were a group of former slaves that organized a parade led by 2,800 singing children, where they read Bible verses, they prayed, they sang, and reburied the soldiers with honor as an act of gratefulness, they say, for their ultimate sacrifice, which gave them freedom. So that was in Charleston where that happened. Then we look at things that have gone on just in remembering those who have fought for us. And none bigger, right, that I think of in my mind as a kid remembering the impact of this and my mother taking me there, the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. But it was in 1921 when President Harding had the remains of an unknown soldier killed in France during World War I buried in the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier at Arlington Cemetery, and on the tomb is the phrase, "Here rests in honored glory an American soldier known but to God." So since 1921, it's been the tradition for presidents to lay a wreath on the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, which is guarded 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. The number 21 being the highest salute. And the sentry takes 21 steps. This had such an incredible impact on me. Faces the tomb for 21 seconds, turns and pauses 21 seconds, then retraces his steps. If you've never been to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier at Arlington Cemetery, do yourself a favor and put this on your list. And there are many other things that we could talk about with Memorial Day and remembrances of horrible wars and sacrifices so many made to give us our freedom or to protect our freedom, fighting for our freedom. World War I, World War II, you think, you know, you go through and you think of the names and you think of the stories. And I think every year I probably come up with, or I'm probably sent another story about something that somebody has done that's just so heroic and so amazing and so self-sacrificing. And so this is the day, this is the weekend to take that moment and remember those people that laid down their life, honoring our American heroes for all of their sacrifice and all of their courage and what they ultimately sacrificed for all of us moving forward and back in our history. And it's like Flanders Field, the poem Flanders Field. That was actually composed during World War I, and it was by a Canadian gunner, a medical officer, who fought in the second battle near Flanders, Belgium. And he talked about the battle as a nightmare, as the enemy carried out one of the first chlorine gas attacks. And he wrote, "For 17 days and 17 nights, none of us have had our clothes off, nor our boots even, except occasionally. In all that time, while I was awake, gunfire and rifle fire never ceased for 60 seconds. And behind it all was the constant background of the sights of the dead, the wounded, the maimed, and a terrible anxiety, lest the line should give way." Finding one of his friends killed, John McCrae, who was in that battle, who wrote that, he helped bury him along with other dead in the field, Flanders Field. Noticing the field was covered with poppy flowers, he wrote, "In Flanders fields the poppies blow between the crosses row on row that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders Field." And if you think about Memorial Day and you think about sacrifice, think about that poem and how much that resonates with what so many in our history have done, the sacrifices in all of the various wars. And, you know, you think of the day in history, you think of the where it falls, and you think of the fallen, and again, the significance of it and where you are. Maybe there is parades honoring those. Maybe there is, maybe there's something that happens in your town square. Maybe there's something that happens in your suburb, wherever it is that you live. And there's a reason. There's a reason there's a reason we remember. There's a reason why it's become that day. It used to be called Decoration Day, is to honor those who have died in our wars and to remember exactly the sacrifice of not only just the people we lost, but their families. What it means, the flags, insignia, flowers placed on graves of veterans in local cemeteries. It's one of those days. It's also a day of life. It's also a day to observe, like, as I said, the laying of the wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns in Arlington National Cemetery in Arlington, Virginia, and it also signifies life, the beginning of summer in the United States. All right, stay with us. Much more coming your way on the flip side.
No matter if supply lines are down, product deliveries are slow, and that most everything costs more these days, you still have neck and shoulder pain, right? Good news. Sunny Bay has new products that target neck and shoulder pain. Products that are in stock now, ready to ship anywhere now. Like our extra long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs. You can heat them in a microwave oven, and they come in a variety of colors and patterns. And for stress relief, get our lavender scented hands-free neck wraps. Or maybe you need one of our smaller lower back wraps. great for seniors. Again, there's no shipping delays from Sunny Bay. Find our new products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay Neck Wraps. All our products are great for men or women, are reusable, and easy to clean. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay Neck Wraps. Order now because stock is high and shipping is fast. From Sunny Bay.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
My name is Milan Vukovic. 10 years ago, I got frustrated with the quality of Pau D'Arco tea sold in the stores. So, I founded the Pau D'Arco Tea Club that now ships our super tea to over 100 countries. You, too, can order or get info about the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea at www.drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. Why settle for less when you can order original pure Pau D'Arco and drink super tea for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping? Each pound makes 300 cups, which is the equivalent of 12 cents per cup for the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea. Order now at www.drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113.
So here we are on this Memorial Day weekend, and I talk about this show and say that it's about what's happening in your backyard and mine. And there's no question, Uvalde, the Texas town where too many children lost their lives at Robb Elementary School on a day that was supposed to be a happy day, where they were coming to school to celebrate, to get ready for the summer, and to get ready for Memorial Day weekend, where there was a parade that was planned and a barbecue and all kinds of wonderful things that would have made for a great weekend for any of these children or any of the parents of these children. Instead, it's about grief, grief that's so bad, so deep, that a syndrome, broken heart syndrome, actually hit one family, and the worry is that more could find themselves in this situation. This city of Uvalde is 90 miles west of San Antonio, just east of the U.S.-Mexico border, and it's devastated. 7 10-year-olds, 2 fourth-grade teachers have been named publicly by relatives as among the dead when this all unfolded. The moment it happened, the gunman who killed 19 students and 2 teachers at this Texas elementary school apparently was there for up to an hour before police or law enforcement forcibly entered a classroom and killed him. And then there is the stories, and this is where this investigation is going to happen. And now you have the governor of Texas who reversed what he said about heroes because of what he had heard had happened. And the bottom line is this: there is massive outrage, no matter what your politics are, over the specifics of the school, of what went on in that school, you know, with this shooting. So the president and the first lady went there and said, you know, we're going to do something. They laid flowers, paid respects because of the crosses that have been there that people have been visiting with the names of all of the people who were killed at the hands of this psychotic lone 18-year-old gunman who was then, of course, gunned down. There was people that responded to his visit by screaming out, "Do something, do something." That's what Biden was greeted with when he arrived in Uvalde. And so at Robb Elementary School, you think of this memorial, these 21 white crosses, one for all of the people that, all the kids and teachers that were killed, and a bouquet of white flowers that were piled up in front of the school sign. I mean, that was laid there, and there's been so many flowers and so much reaction to this. But the police inaction is the thing that, you know, because the crowd when Biden was there, because I'm going to reverse back to that for a second, there's about 100 people or so, they were screaming, do something, and when he got into his car, he just said, "We will." I mean, that was it, and he was off after that. And so there were people saying, "We want change, we want action," and it continues to be something that happens over and over again. A mass shooting happens, people cry, then it's gone, nobody cares, then it happens again and again and again and again. I mean, these are the kinds of things that were being yelled at, this kind of stuff that was being talked about in Uvalde and, of course, other nooks and crannies of the United States. The Justice Department announced on Sunday they're going to review the law enforcement response and make its findings public, that they're going to make them public, because there is scrutiny as to, even with this grief and whatnot, that were lives lost because officers did not act to stop the gunman, who was ultimately killed by a Border Patrol tactical officer, or officers, right? They're the ones that ultimately took him out. So there are legitimate questions going on as to what was the response time? Why were they not going in? Why were some children dialing 911 and saying, "Please help us"? There was one little girl that was doing that, who ultimately, as the story goes, and she has said, watched her friend die and put her blood on her and acted as if she were dead so she could survive. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine what that was like? So the fact that the Border Patrol tactical unit got in there and did what they had to do, bravo on that. The fact that there's these questions about the response is the significant outrage. I think that through that grief, so many of the people in that city are feeling, because of the details about what didn't happen and the timelines, and could more people have been, you know, saved? Could they have done that? Is that exactly what went down? You know, this is significant, because imagine if they're waiting, and more kids are falling. No, not acceptable. Not acceptable, because that is the risk that you accept when you go into that job. I like what Janice Dean, the weather person on Fox, said. Janice and I used to work together at WFAN a zillion years ago, it seems like. And one of the things that she says is, it's like a fireman not going into a fire because it's too dangerous. So during an appearance over the weekend, Texas State Senator Roland Gutierrez said the mistakes made by law enforcement during the shooting at Robb Elementary may have led to the passing away of the kids. Because, remember, some of them were hit. Did they bleed out? And previously, what has been reported is this 18-year-old Salvador Ramos was inside adjoining classrooms. A group of 19 law enforcement officers stood outside the classroom in the school for 50 minutes as they waited for room keys and tactical equipment, right? And what Gutierrez said ultimately, he said, "It's not fair to put it on the local ISD cop. At the end of the day, everybody failed here. We failed these children. We even failed them in the Texas legislature. But I want to know what they come up with, the Justice Department, in this investigation, because to me that's obviously significant. It's significant to anybody who has children in classrooms as to what the response is." I've said this before. We've had people on the show, and we'll be talking about this throughout the next weeks. But I have a friend that lives in Israel. In Israel, the teachers are armed. The teachers can reach in a desk, they're armed, wherever they do with their firearm, whatever they do, and they can take out a shooter if a shooter should breach the school. What about private law enforcement? What about the idea of the one door in? That's a curiosity now, saying that the door was propped open. And finger pointing at somebody propping open the door is not the answer. But it's why aren't, with these other shootings, why aren't certain things mandatory? Why doesn't that happen? Why aren't people following some kind of protocol? All the nonsense that goes on sometimes in the backbiting fighting on school boards, this should be top priority. Because of things that have happened in the past, you go all the way back, for God's sake, to Columbine, right? So at this point, it's a wait and see that the shooter was able to walk. We know this for sure. He was able to walk to the school with a rifle, enter through that unlocked door, and barricade himself inside a classroom for an hour before he was killed. I mean, we know that's exactly what happened, and that he was able to open fire, and that was that, and who happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, unfortunately, was gunned down. But could more, my question is to saving people, could more children who were injured, I mean, were they injured, could they have been saved if there was a quick response? And we don't know that answer, and they'll look at coroner's reports, they'll look at timelines, they'll do all of that. But trust me, of all the reports, of all the investigations that we talk about that go round in circles, this Justice Department investigation should be top priority, and it should be something that we all care about, because I think chasing that timeline, knowing the specifics of what happened, is so important, so incredibly important. And, you know, look, bravo for the Border Patrol tactical unit that killed him. But could something have been done sooner than when that ultimately opened up? And I think the heartbreak, the outrage, the just disbelief has to be continuing. It hasn't even been a week for many of these people. And for most of these families, in fact, all these families, there has been some sort of an online fundraiser for the children of Irma Garcia, who was the beloved school teacher killed in the Uvalde school shooting, and Joe Garcia, her husband, who died of that broken heart, died of a heart attack days later. For that family, the GoFundMe is over $2.5 million. It's four young children that lost their mother and their father. You know, the campaign's goal, as reading this story, was initially $10,000. 100% of the money, of course, goes to the Garcia family for all of those expenses. And I think that's wonderful. People are giving just even a couple of dollars here or there. It's over 46,000 donations. All right, stay with us. Much more coming your way next this Memorial Day weekend.
Did you know that you could easily be saving up to 90% on your taxes by simply making a phone call? That's right. The Fortune 500, the globalists, all the big billionaires and millionaires, they know about the loopholes written into the law where most of them pay almost zero tax. In fact, many of them pay no tax. You even see it on the news. How are they able to do that, but the common person can't? So whether you're a school teacher, a lawyer, a scientist, a millionaire, a billionaire, or whether you're just a regular blue-collar worker, everybody should learn about the legal, lawful loopholes. And we've got an organization and a group that I am so proud to be working with, American Tax Solutions. GCN has a special deal with them to get you the best rates. And here's the most important part. They save you money and then get part of the savings. This is an absolute win-win solution. You've got to give them a call at 855-907-4841 or GCNTaxCut.com. That's GCNTaxCut.com. The only way you miss out is not making the phone call. Make it now.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Tragedy in the Lone Star State. After one of the deadliest school shootings in U.S. history, the shooting at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, leaving 19 children and two teachers dead, along with the alleged teenage shooter. The aftermath is sparking a political debate over mental health services, school safety, and gun laws. Speaking on CBS's Face the Nation, Arkansas Republican Governor Asa Hutchinson shares his thoughts while reflecting on the recent shooting.
We have to look at how we can better secure our schools, and it is about the single point of entry that, by blocking it open, allowed the gunman to come in.
The president and first lady spending much of their Sunday in Uvalde meeting with the families of the victims of this shooting. This is USA Radio News. The former president is continuing to host rallies across the country. From the USA Radio News Los Angeles News Bureau, Ellie Andrews has the details.
Former President Donald Trump rallied for Harriet Hageman, who's mounting a primary challenge to Wyoming Republican Representative Liz Cheney.
Liz Cheney has helped the radical Democrat Party weaponize the national security state and law enforcement against MAGA and MAGA supporters.
Representative Cheney voted along with nine other GOP House members to impeach former President Trump.
The pain at the gas pump continues this weekend as AAA is reporting the new national average is now $4.61 a gallon, the highest price the United States has seen in 10 years. AAA is predicting over 35 million people will travel by car this Memorial Day weekend. This is USA Radio News.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Megan Dilley joins us now. She's written a book called A Poetic Journey Through PTSD. Megan, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Kate.
So tell me about your background and what led you to writing this book.
So I'm actually a physical therapist in New Jersey. I work mainly in outpatient physical therapy, but it's attached to a hospital. And during the heightened part of COVID, obviously it's not over, but during the heightened part in April 2020, a lot of the staff who were, we were not treating that many outpatients, we were redeployed to different areas of the hospital. And unfortunately, at that time, I unknowingly got redeployed to the makeshift morgue, which is where the bodies who had died were placed because there was nowhere to put them. And I did that on April 6, 2020. And at the time, I thought I was okay, and then I kind of just didn't know what really hit me. I'm used to seeing a lot, and I've been through a lot, and just seeing this and being through this kind of put me in the state of PTSD.
Yeah, wow. So going through that, I mean, you had no idea what hit you. You didn't expect that to happen, right?
No. I mean, at the time, I was supposed to be redeployed somewhere else. And when I got there, they actually were like, oh, do you mind moving the bodies? And I'm kind of like that person that doesn't always know how to say no. And other people were doing it. I felt like I should help out because that time was just so crazy around here. Anyway, we in general didn't really know what had hit us. And I was like, okay, sure. And then I got out there and I was like, oh, again, I didn't know what hit me. And, you know, finished it, did the day there, drove home and was like, okay, I guess, you know, I'll be okay. It's no big deal. And then just started getting these terrible triggers. And I'm not like an overly emotional person, but I started like crying every day, and I just didn't really know what was going on in my head.
And so that happens to you, and what do you do to combat that?
I mean, initially, like, I kind of told my supervisor, director, and I kept working to kind of put it out of my head, but things weren't getting any better. He had given me the number for a therapist, but I was like, I'm fine, you know, I'll get through this, whatever, it's no big deal. And then things just kept getting worse and worse and worse, and I just didn't know what was going on. I've never experienced anything like this before. And so I called the psychologist, the therapist, who's been great for me, and she just kind of really saved me with everything, because I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know how to help myself at this point. And I was continuing to work, but I was still getting these triggers, and I was seeing things, and I was just, noise was so loud. And just going into like a CVS, I would walk in and I would hear a refrigerator noise, but I didn't get that the connection between why that was a trigger and just hearing that noise. And even though it wasn't what I did that day, just the fact that I was in a refrigerator moving bodies and I heard this noise, it's just that connection is an instant trigger.
Yeah. So for you, and we're going to talk about obviously a poetic journey through PTSD, which you can get on Amazon or Barnes and Noble, but does that give you more understanding of people that struggle with PTSD? Because wow, all of a sudden you get that curveball and you have no idea what's going on and you need help.
Yeah, and it's something obviously I think most people are aware of through war veterans who are involved in seeing a lot of death and seeing these horrific things that they deal with, and then they come back from battle and have these symptoms where, you know, you hear a gunshot and it's just that oversensitivity to things, where you hear something that sounds like a bomb and you like duck and cover. And obviously my case is different, but post-traumatic stress disorder is very much a part of healthcare. Firefighters deal with it. Police officers deal with it. Just from seeing trauma over and over again, this happened to be one instant in my case that kind of set it off. But it's definitely common in other professions.
So you write this book, and tell us about this book and why you decided to go on that journey of calling it a poetic journey through PTSD and putting it out there in the world.
So before I became a physical therapist, I was an English major. I have my BA in English, and I would say every time I did have hard times or hardships, I'm kind of very introverted and I wouldn't really talk about it with people. So I would turn to poetry and writing because I didn't get things out. And this was the same case in this instance. The August after everything happened, I mean, I was journaling, but the August after April 2020, I began to start writing poetry. Things just were in my head. I had to get them out in a different way. And that's when the book started. I would write about a poem a month. And, you know, when I got to the end of it, I mean, I thought about publishing, but not really. It's, you know, I just wanted to get the poems out for me. But I had, you know, shared it with a couple people. And they're like, oh, you really should maybe think about publishing this, you know. Getting out for yourself, but also it can help families who don't really understand people who are going through PTSD, and also other people who are dealing with it. Because, like, when you think of the symptoms, I felt a bit crazy. The noise hypersensitivity that I had that I've never experienced before, and panic attacks, and I've never had this in my life. And I have seen things, and I've seen things in the hospital setting. And I've had a lot of physical injuries and things, sports injuries, and dealt with things. But this was just a totally different animal and something I had never experienced before. And when you're going through it, it's really hard to understand yourself what you're going through, but also to have other people understand what you're going through. And that is difficult because you're like, you tell people, but I tell things, I'm like, oh, I'm going through a panic attack, or, oh, that noise is really bothering me. But I talk pretty calmly when I say things. So people are like, yeah, right. You know, they don't get how much this can affect people because you don't show it.
Wow, well said. So from the book, do you have a favorite poem or a favorite line from a poem or something that you just remember that you wrote and it really just stuck with you?
I have a poem. I mean, I can start with one because I think it kind of shows the emotions that you feel and the hypersensitivities that I had, especially with noise. So I was going to start with The Beautiful Symphony.
Let's hear it. Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. So The Beautiful Symphony. It starts with a single noise, so slight. A car zooms by. You hear it. Then another with a single motor that sounds like a drone. Gets louder and louder. More noise chimes in a beautiful symphony. But not to some. It evokes fear, irritation, and the volume can't be turned down. There is no place of solace as you try to press on. It gets worse. It isolates because no one else hears it. But even in isolation, it blares. It pounds in your head. You want to turn it off, slow it down, but can't until you find satisfying noises of peace in nature's path. A bird chirping, a brook calling, which soothes you for at least the moment. With the beautiful symphony of lyrics from another time, where do you find your beautiful symphony?
Wow, that really is truly a gift to anybody who picks up your book and reads it or anybody that reads that poem in general. Well done. And so this was just your feelings. Like you said, you wrote a poem a month.
Yeah, a poem a month, and then I got them all down. I reworked them a little bit, but I kept them pretty close to the original form, pretty raw. Not always the easiest thing to read, but just very realistic to what I was going through, and I'm guessing other people have gone through with PTSD.
Yeah. What do you hope people take away from reading A Poetic Journey Through PTSD?
I hope it will reach an audience of people who maybe suffer from PTSD, to show that, you know, some of the symptoms that they're going through are not abnormal, and other people can relate and deal with that, because that's something I didn't really have when I was diagnosed. And I wish I had had somebody else who could kind of be like, oh, I have similar things, similar symptoms. And then also, obviously, for families of people with PTSD, it kind of gives a little more insight, especially when read or heard out loud, of what someone is going through, because it was very life changing for me. I felt like a totally different person after this. And like I said, I thought I was fine. And then things just, I'd never experienced this, and I felt like a different person. Like, it just, yeah, I'm definitely doing much, much better. But it's, I think the other thing about it that I wanted to get out there is, a lot of times, you know, you have an injury. I did kind of write a poem about this, but you have an injury and, you know, you have therapy and the therapist, you do rehab and it gets better. But PTSD definitely comes in waves and it gets better. But anytime you add more stress to your life or overdo in some way, it just gets worse and worse and worse, and you can't shut it off.
Wow.
And that's a little different, being more of like a mental illness versus a physical, which I deal with on a daily basis with patients. Just getting that understanding. I'm a pusher by nature, and just being like, you know what? Once I start getting symptoms, I need to back off. Either that other people don't see them. You know, right. you need to stop, or else it just escalates and then you can't stop it.
Wow. Incredible. We have just a couple of seconds left. Tell us your website.
My website is www.megandillyauthor.com.
Wonderful. And you can get the book on Amazon, there, Barnes & Noble. Megan, thank you so much.
I really appreciate it, Kate. Thank you so much for the interview.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So, it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now, and as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
Here's a question for you. Why is it that some people aren't as stressed out about the future as you'd think they'd be? Answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who have prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with empty store shelves. Is yours? If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits, at least one for each member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order will ship fast and arrive discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now, before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Noel Nation joins us. He's written an interesting book, The Education of Teacher, Lessons a Small Town Taught a Teacher. So you think about being a teacher and you think about what that would be like, and he certainly knows. Noel, thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
So what's so interesting is, I don't know that this was going to be your career path, but from what I understand and what I gleaned in reading this is that your friends really wanted you to become a teacher. There was something that they saw in you that convinced them, I guess, that you had the right stuff. Is that what happened to you?
Well, yes. At one time, I had a pipe dream of maybe being a doctor. I know I always wanted to be kind of in the medical field, physical therapy, but I took some, I was in pre-med for a while, and then I wanted to also play some collegiate baseball, and that was more of my interest. And as my studies went on, I didn't study much because of baseball was taking so much time, and I had a professor that she a Lebanese professor that was having to stay back and tutor me a lot. They didn't, at back in the late 70s and early 80s, they didn't have, at least where I went to school, a big athletics, take care of your studies type of program. So I had to go to class late in the evenings, early in the mornings of the classes that I missed while I was out playing baseball. And I had the Lebanese teacher said, "Get out, you're no good." So she kind of got tired of messing with me. So I started looking for alternatives, and I had some folks that said, "Hey, why don't you get into education?" And because I don't know exactly why, I just kind of figured maybe because, you know, whenever I was talking to people, they would say, they would get the idea that I explain things fairly well. So that's the direction I eventually went, and turned out to be a really good suggestion.
So you spent your whole life teaching in the town called Cleveland, Oklahoma, small town.
Yes, ma'am.
And that makes sense. Yes. with the title. What made you decide that you were going to write this book?
Well, over the course now of 40 years in education, you meet some interesting people, and you have some interesting situations, and some of them funny, some of them not so. And I would tell some of the stories, some of the situations that I was into some people, and a lot of people would laugh, and a lot of people would go, "Well, you know, what's going on?" That type of stuff, depending upon the story. And I had one teacher come to me and said, "You know what? You need to write a book about all these things that you come in contact with." And as it stood, you know, every time something happened, I wrote it down. I had a little section in my computer, a little folder, and went down and wrote down the story, because I knew if I'm going to repeat them, I'm going to have to repeat them correctly in the way they happened.
And it's interesting. I'm going to jump in here a second.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So, Noel, as you were going along, you were writing down all the things that happened that you found fascinating, good, bad, ugly, whatever. And it's interesting, in your book, you talk about pure education, life, love, and tragedy. You talk about adjustments in education, something people are talking about today. Teachers are scrambling, game changers, you call it. You talk about the river of education. You talk about the troubles in education. What are the troubles in education as you see them now and what you talked about in your book?
I think when I wrote my book, you know, I didn't want to just write down these stories. I thought there's a point to I have learned a lot of stuff through this. And one thing I want to get across to people is some of the things that the importance of public education and some of the things that have gone wrong in public education. And I think maybe the way that we can get it back. I know a lot of people are talking private education, charter schools, and those are really big now, and school vouchers, you know, take your kid to where you want to take him. And I'm thinking, you know, public schools, we get who we have, and we have to educate them. And they are all sorts of life. I wrote in one of my books, or not one of my books, one of my sections, that in the same school, we've got some people that bring their kids to school, and they drop them off. They're in a Mercedes, and they drop them off because they do not want their kids mingling with other kids on the bus. And then we've got other people right behind that Mercedes that's got a pickup that's being held together by baling wire, whose kid can't ride the bus because he got kicked off. And so we've got to service those people and everybody in between. But private schools, charter schools, they get to pick and choose who they educate. But public schools do not. So that's one of the plights of public education. So we've got to fix it so that everybody have the same chance for education. So these are some of the suggestions. There are some of the suggestions that I put in the book about how we can very possibly do that.
You know, you went from, you were teaching science, and then at one point in your career, you go to become a principal at the middle school level. What was it like making the leap to becoming a principal?
Oh, my. I found out there is a vast difference between high school students, and I was teaching honor students. I taught physics, and I taught anatomy, and I was also the athletic director and coached baseball and football at that time. And so I went down to the middle school to become an administrator, and I realized that high school students are like cats. You leave me alone, I'll leave you alone. When I want your attention, I'll come and get it. And middle school students are like puppy dogs. They want your attention all the time. And no matter what happens to them, they're going to come back to you with a wagging tail. So, and they're quite different.
The name of the book is The Education of a Teacher, Lessons a Small Town Taught a Teacher. And you can get Noel Nation's book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Are you optimistic about the future of education?
You know, education has changed so much since I first started, and certainly I'm optimistic about it. I just think we need kids, people. One of the points that I put in the book was that if you get into education because you love kids, find another reason, because there are times you won't love kids while you're in education. It's got to be a passion. You've got to recognize the great and vast need, regardless of what you've got to go through. You still have to get it done. And if you have to love kids in order for that to happen, then you're in the wrong profession. Loving kids, it's a huge part of it, but it's got to be a passion.
Yeah. I understand that. My grandmother was a teacher, and boy, I heard stories just like your stories.
If your grandmother was a teacher, then that she taught probably, maybe in the golden age of education when the teacher was right and the kid was wrong, and when you got home, you got dealt with that way. But now it's the other way around.
Yeah, different. Hey, we have like a minute left, and you kind of said this throughout really the interview. What do you hope people take away from reading your book?
I want people to understand that public education is in a very tough place right now, and we've got to support it emotionally, physically, and intellectually. Teachers, the ones that are out there and those that consider it a passion, will do it wherever it happens, however things go. They'll get it done, and they will do it. And be proud about it, and do it to the best of their ability. May not agree with a lot of things, but certainly stay in contact with your teachers. Stay in contact, even if you don't have any kids in school. Stay in contact with teachers, because the encouragement is greatly needed. That for sure.
Oh, perfect place to end this. The Education of a Teacher, Lessons a Small Town Taught a Teacher. Noel Nation, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Once again, thank you so much for the opportunity. I do appreciate it.
And thanks to all of you for listening to this version of the show. Make it count, everybody.
Feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Pouty Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So, it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. Drinksupertea.com.